You can listen to The Professional Left on iTunes or at our website, professionalleft.blogspot.com, where you can also contribute to this podcast. There's a PayPal button at our website, or you can mail us a letter and or contribution to our P.O. Box, P.O. Box 9133, Springfield, Illinois, 62791.
This is the podcast for November 30th, 2012. It's not safe for work.
Recorded live from just above the yellow stain on John McCain's front lawn, it's The Professional Left with Driftglass and Blue Gal.
Good morning, everybody. It's Hello. Friday morning. We've had lots of technical difficulties.
Yeah. I hope you salvaged. We did this podcast actually last night.
Yeah.
Really yesterday afternoon. And then Blue Gal listened to it. And if you've ever listened to The Fifth Element.
Yeah, you sound like a Fifth Element.
And so I hope you salvaged a bit of that recording.
I did. I did.
Treat our user, because that's actually what my voice sounds like.
It's not safe for work.
Recorded live from just above the profession.
Yeah, and that's what I have to fix every week is him going, yeah.
I sound like a creature from the ninth dimension, and my lovely wife, the sound engineer, makes me sound like a human, which is quite a remarkable feat. Let me tell you.
Everybody take a drink.
Yes.
Because the science is necessary to the story.
That's right. You take the science out. It ain't science fiction, is it?
Right.
No, it's a Western. It's Wagon Train in Space.
Oh, gosh. John McCain's front lawn. It ought to be full of yellow stains by about now. But anyway, we want to talk a little bit about this fiscal cliff.
It's not any of the... Well, add that to the long list of things that don't exist.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, yeah.
There's the Tea Party. Although,
I have to say, hat tip to our evil twins over at Liberal Oasis. They have a question of, is Obama a 3D chess master? I don't quite think it's that good on his side. I'm not going to give him that much credit.
No.
But did you read what I put in the podcast notes about Krauthammer this morning?
Yes, release the Krauthammer. Yeah. There's something
Charles Krauthammer is comparing the deal the White House is offering to the terms at Appomattox.
Yeah. Which, for my
money, why would you do that?
Well, first of all, the terms at Appomattox weren't nearly harsh enough.
That's right.
And secondly, yeah, wow, okay. I guess he knows his audience, that's for sure, because that's certainly, you know, when you mention the war to some of these people, they go straight to the Civil War or the War of Northern Aggression, whichever you prefer.
Mm-hmm.
And Krauthammer, it really did say it's not bad, it's insulting.
Yeah.
The terms of surrender. No, what we should have, actually we should have them surrender on the deck of the Indianapolis. Like the Japanese, there should be a formal ceremony. We break their swords, and they, you know, and the Tea Party just keeps fighting on the hills, not knowing that the
war's over. Yeah,
been over for about 100 years.
Oh man.
Yeah. Well, that's, you know, this is this interim period between the election and the inauguration, and things are just weird this time of year. That there's
things
just
weird this time because they set it up that way.
Yeah. Too. Well, because you know, because the whole idea that this is all, don't worry, we got this. This is fine. All 2 years ago during the lame duck session was all predicated on the assumption that they would win.
Yeah.
And that was never a foregone conclusion. So you can't really say that this was all part of some long game. I appreciate any good general taking tactical advantage of any mistakes their enemies make. And by God, I was just going to say a little bit about Napoleon saying, don't fight your enemies too many times or they'll learn how you fight.
Yeah.
The Republicans really only have, I've joked about this before, one page in their playbook. And they just run it over and over again. Anybody who remembers 1992 remembers, you know, the party that created the deficits was put out of office. Bill Clinton was put into office, and he was told the day he started, you can't do health care, you can't do this, the deficits are awful. He walked out 8 years later, having done things I disagree with surpluses. But we've all seen this playbook before. This is the only know how to fight this way. This is all they know how to do. So anytime the answer to the question is not complete capitulation to Republicans, is not that Rush Limbaugh in 2004, I believe. mm-hmm. telling Democrats to shut up. I mean, he went on a long tirade about when you win an election, then you can have what you want. But until then, shut up, crawl back into your rat holes and shut up. Well, golly, again, each election cycle, Republicans set bars for mm-hmm. how people should behave. Mm-hmm. And every time they lose, they immediately retract all of it and behave in ways that are exactly the opposite to the ways they have prescribed. And I'm sorry, you lost.
Yeah.
And you lost twice and you lost big. And no. I'm perfectly willing to talk entitlement reform and Pentagon reform with anyone who cared about deficits before 2008. Anybody who wasn't yapping about how Bush tax cuts were easily affordable during the Bush administration. If you fucked up that badly, honest to God, you need to shut up. Because first of all, you sound like a damn fool. Secondly, we already know what cards you're holding. It's like you're playing poker with your hand facing outward.
Yep.
We know what you've got. And yes. It's a losing hand. And if you want to keep playing it, we're going to keep eating your lunch. That's a reference to Mitt Romney going and having his lunch eaten. Anyway, yeah, and the idea that Krauthammer's solution, you know, and remember, he's one of the leading lights. He's one of the intellectuals on the right. is just to, again, his mortal remains are just sort of plopped on a desk, and they draw a face on whatever pumpkin he has turned himself into. And he just yawps on about, you know, he and George Will are two sides of the same coin.
Mm-hmm.
Just mm-hmm. whatever world you're looking at bears no relationship to reality. And you are of an age where people just think you're senile, Charles.
Yeah. And the idea, too, that this is about surrendering after you lost is just beyond, you know, no, we're still a viable army when they don't even know what they stand for.
I
love what you just said, too, about Pentagon reform. No one's talking about that. Pentagon reform.
I will say one more thing about the Civil War analogy, because it is really appropriate, more so that the last time Jefferson Davis addressed the Congress, after Richmond fell, his essential argument was, good, now we don't have to defend cities anymore. Freed from the need to defend cities, now we can just range across the countryside and fight the enemy in a guerrilla war. And it really is that, now that we've lost the election, now we're in a really good position to fight the real fights that we want to have. And no, because the whole point of having the war was a winner and a loser, and you lost. So you can't argue it was a good thing. Anyway, yes, let's get back to Pentagon reform, shall we?
No one's talking about that. No one's talking about defense spending. I haven't heard one word. No. And the only person who's mentioned this in the past month was Nancy Pelosi. And she said, look, we've got to change the way we look at foreign policy. War isn't an option anymore. And she's right. You know, we don't need tanks and large armies anymore. We just don't.
Well, that's the two front, two war strategy, which was the United States military needs to be big enough and strong enough to fight two major wars at the same time. And that two major wars meant Russia. It meant the Soviet
Union. Well, it meant Japan and Europe. Yeah.
And we need to be stocked
70
up.
Years ago.
And we can't. And those enemies are gone. The enemies that replaced them are gone. And the wars we are going to fight in the future are going to have all kinds of gray areas and all kinds of very different profiles for how we fight them, if we fight them at all. And the idea that you need to keep pouring money down this Pentagon rat hole is absurd.
Which is not – you cannot audit the Pentagon. Yeah. It's too big.
Well, you can.
It just take 10 years.
You could track down every dollar and find out where it goes. But mm-hmm. what we do know is the only people who made money off the Iraq war are Dick Cheney's friends.
Yep.
That we know for sure. Dick Cheney's defense contractor friends looted the place – so gave our soldiers toilet water to drink. You remember that?
Yep.
We shrink wrapped pallet trucks of your tax dollars, literally put
them
on.
Just went completely missing.
Yep. Literally flew them in the desert and they all disappeared. Hundreds of millions of dollars just vanished into thin air. And everyone on the right was cool with that. Well, you know, that's the way it goes. Well, you know, war. Well, you know, their banking system over there has really collapsed. And all the people who were cool with that, who were cool with Halliburton looting the Pentagon and then moving their headquarters to Dubai so nobody could get their hands on their records, Dick Cheney's former company, his buddies, making a profit off of his war, off taking your tax dollars and the lives of your brothers and sisters and your children and your parents, everybody who was cool with that needs to shut the fuck up for the next generation because you're unfit to act as a citizen.
To govern, yeah.
You don't know what you're doing. You're either complicit or a criminal or you're a complete chump, but there's no really third alternative there.
I want to ask you a question, Driftglass. Do you agree with Howard Dean? Howard Dean was on...
Always.
no, I don't mean always.
Always.
Ah, yay, Howard Dean. We love Howard Dean.
Yeah, we
met him at Netroots Nation. He and his brother. His brother's such a hoop. But Howard Dean was on Last Word last night talking about the fact that going over the fiscal cliff is actually the best thing for progressives.
Yes.
Yep. What makes me suspicious about that is that Rush Limbaugh is saying going over the cliff is the best thing for conservatives. Now, I trust Howard Dean way more than I trust Rush Limbaugh, but I'm just wondering whether the cuts that come in social programs are going to be real and they're going to hurt. And it scares me.
Yeah.
So
they won't come all at once. They won't come. You know, everything doesn't drop on December 31st.
Yeah.
At midnight. That's not how anything works in the government. Mm-hmm. You know, there are social programs. There are programs that have 2-year budgets. There are programs that have 4-year budgets. When you get down below the surface of we're going to cut stuff into how money is actually allocated to programs, how it's spent, how people budget for it, how people look down the pipe and see what's coming. You know, people act in their... These are long-range programs. Mm-hmm. Radical changes to them would be very, very bad. But I do recall going to a couple of meetings about the American Recovery Act, the ARRA, mm-hmm. American Recovery and Reinvestment Act. And the people who were going to be on the ground were completely freaking out over it because they said, look, we can't handle the money you give us now. The system itself is too rusty and old and inflexible to permit us to do the things that you're going to want us to do. Secondly, you want us to spend a whole bunch of money getting people case managed, so to speak, bringing a whole bunch of people into the employment system and looking for work, and then the money runs out. Okay, I'm still responsible for those people after the money's gone. Who's going to, you know, if there's no money for ongoing, et cetera, I don't want to touch that money in the first place because all I'm going to do is stick myself with a bunch of work down the road that you're not going to pay me to do. So there's all these things that
go on. Well, and wasn't that money there to all of a sudden find jobs for people or train people for jobs that didn't exist?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Rather than basically hiring people. I mean, the smarter stimulus direct at hire. That point would have been just, look, we're going to put everybody to work in the Absolutely. National parks.
And, you know? and the reason for not doing that, and this I understand the rationale for it. The problem some of us liberals have is we understand why lots of things go the way they do, even though they're not perfect. The reason it was done that way is that was the only available conduit for that money. Mm-hmm. And to engage in a process of reopening how everything is done and letting Republicans run naked through that process was not something anybody wanted to do. Because, oh, good, we can start cutting shit now. Now we can, if you really want to set up a WPA or a Civilian Conservation Corps, screw it. Yeah, let's have that fight because we'll just drag that out forever. So the thinking was, as I recall, the most efficacious and efficient and least prone to sabotage when getting that money into the system was using the existing conduits that were there. And I can totally see why you would want to do that, which mm-hmm. sort of gets us back to, is this a good thing for liberals, mm-hmm. progressives, et cetera? I really and truly, it's going to come down to who's willing to fight artists and market the best.
Yeah.
Because the thing that the Obama administration completely fucked up in the first 2.5 years of its existence is they had all these wonderful ideas and some that weren't so wonderful that they completely refused to market.
Yep.
They would not get behind their own shit and be proud of it. They ran away from healthcare reform in 2010. They didn't mention Lilly Ledbetter. They were doing really good things and they wouldn't defend them, which left Republicans to define health care as death panels.
Yeah, and that's really the greatest moment for me of the presidential campaign was when the president used the word Obamacare.
Yeah, yeah.
And all of a sudden, oh, look, we own that.
Uh-huh.
And that could be problematic in the future. Anyone that has any problem with the health care system from now until eternity is going to blame Obamacare for that.
Yeah.
And that's, you know, that's the price you pay. But
well,
owning it and owning the reforms that happened that are actually helping people, I think we didn't do that and we needed to do that. And the other thing is, it looks like, or I've been reading along the margins, that there's so many people are looking for a drop of blood on the ground.
Yeah.
You know, to say, oh, look, Obama's caving, or, oh, look, yep, the Republicans said something stupid. And it's, you know, magnifying glass that people have on the ground just looking for where exactly each dollar is going. I just, it's the holidays, people. I don't have time for that.
Yeah.
But someone was freaking out about how Obama might be caving on making it 39.6% at the highest tax rate, and that he might actually negotiate down to 38 or what. Like, anyone pays that. You know, this is not a real thing in the world. One more thing that doesn't exist.
Well, and look for that to happen.
Yeah, but he, so there was this freak out about that, and I thought, well, that's one of the things Howard Dean said was, look, you just let it go over the cliff. And the top marginal tax rate is 39.6. End of story.
Yeah.
You know, and then you have to negotiate back from that. And then it's the Obama tax cuts we're talking about.
Yes.
So. Well,
and because, you know, this is, again, they have only one playbook. And those of us who remember the first, you know, the early days of the Obama administration, after we got over the big laugh over the application for work for the Obama administration.
Oh, yeah.
Really? I have to tell you all the shit I've ever done online ever.
Have a proctology exam, too.
Yeah. And that's just to get past the first interview.
Yeah.
So if I don't get the job, then you still have all this shit that I've just, thank you. Yeah. No, yeah. I'll go do something else. But after we got over laughing about that, there was a wonderful skit that, I don't know if that's a 1960s word, probably it's from the Alan Brady show. There was a wonderful bit they did on the Daily Show. But after the first 10 weeks of Obama winning, and it was a complete freak out. It was the end of freedom. It was tyranny run wild.
Tyranny,
tyranny. Tyranny had finally come to our shores. And it was the Rand Institute people, and it was Glenn Beck, and it was
Hannity. Kept saying, we have to fight tyranny. Yes.
And yeah, we must fight, you know, and they're going to attack you, Michelle Bachmann, for fighting against tyranny. And, Andrew Breitbart, the late Andrew Breitbart, talking about Potato Day.
Yes.
And it's the death of language. It's Orwellian. They're taking us all over. That's how they do. This is, you know, phase one is throw everything at the wall. Obama's coming for your kids. He's going to make your kids gay. He's going to seize your guns. And by the way, he wasn't born here. Just keep throwing shit out there as fast as you can. Make shit up. Create as many false fires and controversies and bullshit, and make Democrats, if they're stupid, fight all these little battles. Just churn up as much bullshit as you can. And then once that's done, once you've got everyone back on their heels about all of the tyranny and the horror of it all, then you go after them on Obamacare.
Mm-hmm.
Pick the one fight that they want to win and pick something that is, you know, they're going to kill your grandma. They're going to kill your grandma. Remember, this is the guy who wasn't even born in this country. And he's coming for your grandmother. Keep tying your message back to all the bullshit you threw out there.
Yep.
That he's not really one of us. He's really a communist. He wasn't born here. The election was rigged. Acorn stole it for the Negroes. And by the way, he wants to kill your grandma.
Yeah.
And that's what Susan Rice is.
That's what Benghazi is.
Susan Rice is Acorn. Rice is Shirley Sherrod.
Yep.
It's just more, and again, this is going to come down to a contest over media, because whoever wins the fight over, because last time the Republicans won it, because Democrats thought we'd won and now we're going to go govern, and Republicans said, oh, fuck that. No, we're not going to let you govern. We're going to throw up as much crap as we can, and then we're going to seize control of the House, and then we're going to shut the government down, and then we're going to blame all of that on you.
Let me ask you this. it seems to me that this isn't a problem about Susan Rice so much as it's a problem about John Kerry and his Senate seat. And that's so transparent that that's what they want is sure. John Kerry's Senate seat. And so why, if we're going to play three-dimensional chess about this, uh-huh. I guess it just, it's because John Kerry desperately wants to be Secretary of State that we're uh-huh. even having this argument. But somebody needs to sit Kerry down and say, look, it's time for you to just say, look, I'm going to be in the Senate for the next 4 years.
Yeah. Susan
Rice. Suck on it. Suck on it. Yeah.
Susan Rice has, well, first of all, I would nominate Frank Black from Blue Velvet as my first nominee. You know, fuck it. First of all, he buys domestic. You know, he doesn't even fucking Heineken. Pabst Blue Ribbon. The idea that you can that a kind word will still the
yeah, no kind words. I'm just saying, suck on this. I'm not going to be Secretary of State because you want me to be.
And get your marshal your team and push back. And I gotta say, the President of the United States is a fine thing with, you know, if you want to attack someone, come after me.
Yeah.
But John McCain and Lindsey Graham, you know, Grandpa Walnuts and Butters, have painted themselves into such a corner. Again, but that doesn't matter. Again, John McCain, the solution to John McCain would be a recall election or impeachment.
Yeah.
Because John McCain has completely lost his shit. The idea that John fucking McCain, the senator from television, who was out there pushing for bad wars and lying about it for years, would have a problem with someone going on a Sunday show and saying something that turned out not to be 100% correct is so hilarious that you couldn't write it if you were a comedy writer on the Daily Show. But he's doing it.
And little Lindsey Graham is also, you know, desperately worried about his Senate seat. I don't know why he wants to keep it so badly, but hey.
And with Lieberman resigning, you know, they needed a third of that poker hand, so they got Kelly Ayotte.
Ayotte to be the
third.
Yeah.
And this is how you can make a buck, a political dollar. This is how you can increase your clout.
Yep.
And okay, but however this fight turns out, this is how they do. This is how it works.
See, I wouldn't hire Frank Black. I would hire Cornel West.
Nominate.
I would nominate Cornel West for everything.
Yeah.
My brother.
Like your.
Uh-huh. I'm here to talk to you, Hannity, about what the next cabinet is going to look like, my brother.
Uh-huh. I'm sorry.
Just leave it at that. Like, I don't care about qualifications.
I'm sorry, Mr. Graham, Senator Graham. Were you in the Matrix too? Because I don't remember seeing you there. So.
The Matrix too. He was in that.
He was.
That's
he was.
Hilarious.
Why not? He might be in Cloud Atlas, but of the seven people on Earth who.
We don't know. You know, you can attribute any actor to Cloud Atlas from now on. Yeah. 6 degrees of separation. Any game you want to play, just say, oh, yeah, and he was in Cloud Atlas, too. Oh, really? Nobody saw that movie, so it doesn't matter.
Well, he was in the barroom piano scene.
Yeah. Well, and I want to talk a little bit about Hannity and him freaking out about the filibuster changes.
Yes. You mean the filibuster changes that Mitch McConnell proposed 5 years ago?
Yeah, 5 years ago. Right. Yeah. They're extreme.
Yeah.
They're extreme. And really, this is just going through the motions of what Mr. Ailes tells him to say. And it's so,
yes, Mr.
Ailes. You can tell behind the eyes, he doesn't understand what he's saying, but he's giving it all he's got in the Superman voice he's got of these extreme changes to the filibuster rule. And it's so trumped up.
Yeah.
I can't imagine that Hannity actually is selling this. I mean, it just doesn't. Does anybody care on Fox News about the filibuster rules?
No.
So
they do now. They do now
because Hannity said this is the next tyranny.
Well, if you ever see a movie called Outfoxed, good people out there, we've mentioned before, they mentioned the moment when it moved from the Clinton administration to the Bush administration.
Oh,
and they said it was from the top down. It was like a Soviet party line change
and flip the switch. Yeah,
people just decided that how dare you insult and how dare you question the commander in chief? How dare you question the president of the United States from spending years slandering and attacking and gutting and punching Bill Clinton over anything they could lay their hands on.
Yep.
It got to be the solemn occasion and he, the noble guy and this good man and how dare you. And it was, it happened as if, like you said, as if a switch were flipped.
Mm-hmm.
And whoever you don't lose, you know, whatever viewer doesn't just turn you off at that point going, this is bullshit.
Yeah.
I'm going to watch Cake Boss because this is just bullshit.
Exactly.
This is just fucking bullshit. Once you got people who are willing to put up with having their brains washed every 2 weeks, depending on what Roger Ailes wants them to believe, once you've sort of localized your audience to just that group of people, which is pretty much what Fox is, you can tell them anything. You can make up any shit you want, and they're going to believe it because they're not going to go anyplace else ever to challenge it.
But they are going to go to Cake Boss, and that's the thing that kind of gets me about Fox News is for so long they have simply been telling Republicans what makes them feel good, as Rachel Maddow has pointed out. Mm-hmm. And if it doesn't make them feel good to watch Fox – they're just going to change the channel and go to reality TV. I mean,
so they need to, well, they, and that's why they need to be kept feeling good.
Yeah.
They need to be kept feeling like patriots under siege by the forces of totalitarian communism, by which we mean a.
But at some point, don't they just then turn that off? I guess is what I'm wondering. I think Fox News viewership is down quite a bit.
It is. And I think it is kind of seasonal.
Yeah.
You sort of want to get your freak on around election time. Whenever there's some big controversy going on, you want your wingnut battery supercharged. You flip on Fox if you don't do it already. And may I have one brief aside that just made me laugh about Fox News.
Yeah.
As you know, Bruce Bartlett, a former Bush economics guy,
mm-hmm.
has been cast out of the party for saying that essentially supply side economics doesn't work and all the things, you know, that expatriates say. And that's a fine thing. Good for him. But Andrew Sullivan has been writing periodically on his column at the Daily Beast about how indignant he is that Fox News won't have him on to debate. That they won't, the Wall Street Journal refuses to even review his book. And, you know, back in the 90s, they reviewed his book and they loved his book and now they won't even review it. And isn't it indignant? And isn't it unfair? And, oh, my God, Roger Ailes is running like a propaganda machine over there. And,
and oh, my God.
Can you believe that they're so afraid of what other people of facts and reality that Fox News refuses? And even when they reviewed my book, even when they showed it, they blurred my name out on the Newsweek cover. Oh, my God, can you believe it? I do a semi-regular feature on my blog called Stupid Shit Andrew Sullivan Says, or Silly Shit Andrew Sullivan Says, or Hilariously Clueless Shit Andrew Sullivan Says. And the idea that conservative expatriate Andrew Sullivan would be shocked and indignant that, can you believe, Fox News refuses to even have me on their air to debate these important issues, why it would be good for their ratings. From someone whose entire career is now essentially bootlegging liberal critique of conservatism and calling it his own and pretending and all the while pretending liberals don't even exist. The only conversation worth having in this world is between us conservatives who were kicked out of the party and the conservatives who are still in the party. And ignoring the fact there was this other group that has been right about your group all along since Nixon. Liberals have been right about conservatives. And the fact that Andrew Sullivan, A, refuses to even acknowledge we exist, and B, has made his bones on ripping us off of stealing what we've been saying for 40 years wholesale and printing it breathlessly as if it were an epiphany, is hilarious to me. And, of course, the latest one is, can you believe Fox News refuses to have opposing views on to debate shit? And all I can say is, Andrew, I'll debate you anytime, anywhere.
Mm-hmm.
You want to debate Andrew? Let's talk about the last 30 years and where you have been and what you've been doing and how you've made your living. And let's talk about how wrong you've been your entire life. And let's talk further about the fact that you would now like pundits to be held accountable for the things they say.
Yeah.
Only draw that accountability line just after you left the party. You're willing to have people be accountable. And that just makes me laugh. I just want to put that in because it is so fucking transparent.
Well, and I have a question for Mitch McConnell and John McCain.
Oh.
and Lindsey Graham and anyone who, and Sean Hannity, which is, you know, does the Senate want to be in charge of their own arcane rules or do they want to be relevant? And I have called for abolishing the Senate. And I think if they don't get this secret hold, it's not secret hold anymore. They changed that. But the idea that, you know, an 85-year-old senator can lift his little finger and all of a sudden everything stops in the U.S. Senate. Uh-huh. That's not the way the Senate is supposed to operate. Everybody knows that. Yeah. And it needs to change, and everybody knows it needs to change. And if they're going to hold that up, then we just need to abolish the Senate. It's useless, and it's a bunch of old millionaire white guys for the most part, although there's now more women in the Senate than ever before.
Yeah.
But things have got to change there.
I like the idea of a second house of the government. I like the idea of power being divided between two houses. I do like that. But yeah, the Senate is such a completely dysfunctional institution. Mm-hmm. And it is.
And it's, there's something wrong with the fact that they are the only people who can fix it. The people who have broken it are the only people that can fix it. There have been lawsuits, you know, Common Cause tried to sue the Senate and that went nowhere because the Senate rules are written by the Senate, and that's it. So,
Sort of like the media rules are written by the media. So,
yes. Well, and that's true. And it occurred to me today again that we will never have transparency as to what stocks David Brooks and David Gregory own.
No.
And they are operating from the standpoint of what I write in the New York Times or what I say on NBC can directly affect my investments.
Yeah.
And that's just wrong.
Do you remember the one time one of those people was asked that question? Tom Friedman on Australian.
And in Australian TV, yeah.
Australian
he
radio.
Lost his shit. He just.
He did.
Yeah.
He did. The woman asked him, now, isn't
you're
it
worth
true?
A lot of money, aren't you?
You're like a billionaire, right? I mean, doesn't that somehow affect your opinion? What? That has nothing to do with it. That has absolutely nothing to do with it. My opinions are my opinions, and how much I have and how much I make are absolutely not part of this discussion.
Yeah.
And he lost his shit.
Yep.
And when you notice that David Brooks essentially makes, you know, pop-up ads for fracking.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, all the time.
Starting about 3 years ago, every fifth column, pardon the choice of words, and half the time he's on Meet the Press, it's, you know, sentences tend to end with "and fracking."
Yeah.
And I found this wonderful newsletter. I forget where I know I posted it, but it was from like the American Energy Council. David, and even David Brooks thinks fracking is a good idea. It was like an internal ad.
Total circle jerk. Yep.
And I would love to see how much ExxonMobil stock David Brooks owns, but I'm never going to see that.
Well, or how much Northrop Grumman stock David Gregory owns and his wife owns.
Yeah.
And what their input into all of the war stocks. How are your war stocks doing, David Gregory? I want to know. Yeah.
That's none of our damn business, says our Anyway,
speaking of pundits, we had a note from Tyler via Facebook asking us, why is Howie Kurtz never or very rarely mentioned alongside other Sunday news hosts like David Gregory and the rest of Beltway punditry as being just as bad as them? Have you never really just considered him to be that important? Or is there some kind of no Howard Kurtz policy on the podcast?
We promise you. You busted us, Tyler.
We have no policies at all.
Howard Kurtz is one of our.
Howie Kurtz did step in it this week specifically.
Well, Howard Kurtz is one of our major underwriters, Tyler. So he gives us no. He doesn't. We have no underwriter.
I don't know Howie Kurtz, but he did step in it this week. He did a piece on what are the consequences when pundits get it wrong.
Yes. Isn't it weird how there's no consequences when pundits fuck up and they're allowed to go right back on the air and say crazy shit even though they're horribly, horribly wrong, says Howard Kurtz, who's been horribly, horribly wrong almost more than anybody else.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And he didn't mention the Iraq war at all. That was like out of the purveyance of his discussion. And fortunately, the woman he had on, I can't remember her name, but she did say, look, a lot of these Fox News pundits actually work for the campaign.
Yeah.
So
on the payroll.
They're on the payroll of the campaign. So of course they're going to say, oh, we're going to win, you know, and predict winning because they're being paid to say that.
Well, and Tyler, if we went back in time about five, six, 7 years, back when Mr. Steve Gilliard was alive and well and blogging his heart out at a news blog, he used to bang on Howard Kurtz all the time. He used to call him Mr. Kurtz, the character from Heart of Darkness.
Yeah.
Mr. Kurtz, he dead. And he would regularly take him to the woodshed, and he wrote a lot more than most bloggers write at the time. He was really prolific, Mr. Gilliard was. But Howard Kurtz has sort of fallen off the radar a little bit. He is absolutely as much a purveyor of Beltway bullshit as anybody else. But he's not an author of it. He's not an architect of it. He used to be on – have a much higher media profile. But the last 5 or 6 years have seen lots of changes in the media consumption patterns generally, and mine specifically. First of all, Howie Kurtz, I think, got very sick a few years ago and essentially came back into a much more minor role. His whole show is commenting on the media, which is just as about as estuous as you can get. His show is not that influential. He unlike, let's say, David Brooks, who is read by millions of people and potentially billions of people overseas, who is seen on Meet the Press, which is seen by on networks, which means it's seen by 10 to 20 times more people every week than any cable show is, and so forth. Howard Kurtz essentially has a little tiny corner of cable news and so forth.
And his show is only half an hour long.
Yeah.
And also, his wife worked for Arnold Schwarzenegger and did a whole bunch of conservative things out in California, worked on ballot provisions against – it was conservative. She was a conservative working for Arnold. And so this idea that, you know, and the other thing he did is he had on an author, and read passages from her book on the air. And it turned out his wife was a publicist for the book. So, you know, there's stuff going on with Howie that's just kind of bleh. But
so he's kind of an affirmative action case on cable.
There is not a no Howard Kurtz policy on the podcast.
Nope.
We do kind of overlook him, I guess.
And there are a couple of other things that are part of larger trends, which are, for example, I still do on occasion, feature called Sunday Morning Coming Down, which I started doing in 2005, which is a retrospective on the Sunday shows. And I would watch as much of the Sunday shows as I could tolerate. And this is back before I had cable on a regular basis. So I was watching pretty much what America was watching. And Mr. Gilliard used to give me shit about that. And I used to give him shit right back saying, look, this is where most people get their opinions. This is where most political trial balloons are launched. So if you're not looking at this stuff, then you're not looking at what most people are looking at. And you're going to make some errors in how you think people are reacting and why they think what they think. But I stopped doing that. Or slowed it right down because first of all, I stopped covering Fox completely because you know what Fox is going to do. They're going to lie. So how many different ways can you say that? And secondly, people like Charlie Pierce have come along, who's a very fine writer, but who's essentially took over that gig. And I get a laugh out of it, but on Monday instead of Sunday, Charlie will come down with a couple of paragraphs on the Sunday shows. And one thing that makes me feel a little bit irritated is his commenters often saying, finally, someone has had the guts to take on the Sunday morning gas bag shows. Finally, someone has had the guts to take on David Brooks. And
makes you feel kind of small when you
make me feel kind of small. Really, I've been doing that for 7 years and every week and I have. But Charlie, you know, he put me on his blog roll and he was kind enough to say,
he's a
nice guy. Other people got there first and he's a very good writer. So it's hard to begrudge him that.
Then your life has changed a little bit. And Sunday morning and Saturday morning TV is better now because there's Chris Hayes.
And I have a family and they're my priority now. Saturday morning and Sunday morning, I watch Chris Hayes. If I don't watch anything, Chris Hayes and Melissa Harris-Perry.
Melissa Harris-Perry, yeah.
This rich, fascinating, engaging, topical, fun, energetic show with largely very intelligent people, some of whom I violently disagree with, but it's the kind of television that you could have every day if you cared to do so, David Gregory. Mm-hmm. But the what I call dorklash, the whiplash you get flipping from that really engaging, thoughtful, high-energy conversation over to the waxworks dummies that David Gregory puts around his desk every week to repeat the same beltway bullshit talking points every week, passing lightly over Howard Kurtz.
Yeah.
Is you know, I get a lot more out of being engaged in that sort of nerdland and uppers communities, mm-hmm, in our own way than we ever get out of watching a third tier hack like Howie Kurtz.
Yeah.
And commenting on what a douche he is. And there, as long as there's a market for people like that, there will always be a Howard Kurtz. But he just fell off the radar because there's much more interesting stuff to talk about.
Yeah. I want to read something. A listener, a dear listener of ours, sent us a copy of Alan Sherman's Rape of the Ape, The American Puritan Ethic. And this is an old book. We're very grateful for it. Thank you. I want to thank the listener who sent this to us. Thank you. He knows who he is. It's copyright 1973, and it made both of us laugh, this little section on page 266. On July 20th, 1970, Miami Herald reporter Colin Dangard typed up a verbatim copy of the Declaration of Independence, leaving out only the signatures, and approached citizens on the streets of Miami asking them to sign it. Two called the document commie junk. One said, "Be careful who you show that anti-government stuff to." He then submitted the declaration to 300 young adults at a Youth for Christ meeting, yeah, asking them to describe what kind of person would author such a statement. Among their answers were a communist,
yeah,
someone against our country, someone who does not have any sense of responsibility, a redneck revolutionist. You know, someone ought to tell the FBI about this kind of rubbish. And it just goes to show you that the Tea Party, as it is now called, and remember, there is no Tea Party. There is no Tea Party.
Republican base. No Tea Party.
But that Republican base was exactly the same back in July of 1970.
Oh, yeah.
In terms of their ignorance and knee-jerk reaction to anything that
smacked of liberalism
or revolution or questioning. And you had an interesting comment to make about that, Red Foreman.
Yeah, Red Foreman, that 70s show, one of my favorite shows from, because, you know, that's my childhood right there, or my young adulthood. Red Foreman with the dad in that show, a staunch Nixon Republican, who was always threatening to put his foot up someone's ass who stepped out of line. And one of his son's friends teased him about, you know, well, pretty soon the government's going to put probes up your ass and you'll have to, and it'll track everything you do and screw the government. And Red Foreman was like, basically, how dare you? If the government tells you to put a probe up your ass, then by God, you're going to do it. And you're going to salute the flag, young man, because that's America, goddammit. And it is so easy to forget, if you've lived only in the shadow of Ronald Reagan, that these people, the people on the right, used to be fanatics for being obedient to the government.
Well, they always are when there's a white male Christian Republican in office.
Exactly.
Then you respect the white presidency male of the United States.
Did you goddamn well snap off a salute to the flag, young man?
Yeah.
And again, you unplug Bill Clinton from the White House, put in George W. Bush, suddenly it's treason to talk bad about the commander in chief. It's treason to even question him, because don't you know we're at war? Well, we were at war in the Clinton administration too, and you impeached him, but he had a D after his name. And again, the way, if you look back, the way that their contempt for the government and contempt for anyone who questions the government just gets flipped off and on and off and on. Concern about deficits and screw deficits, off and on, just based on the color and party affiliation and gender of who's in the White House. It is Orwellian.
Yeah.
And the, and if you look through that long lens of history, it's really creepy when you see, and the way they managed to do this is by forgetting that what they did yesterday, by being trained by Fox News and by hate radio to forget whatever they were saying yesterday and ignore tapes of what they were saying, ignore tapes of what Sean Hannity was saying. Mitch McConnell never said, well, yeah, but that was not, that was 2005. Just ignore the past and do what Roger Ailes tells you, and boom, you have a Republican Party.
And we're going to have to skip ahead a little bit, but
that's fine.
I wanted also to thank our Facebook friend Tyler for pointing out to me that Simpson Bowles, the actual Simpson and actual Bowles people, are now making $40,000 a pop to talk about fiscal responsibility to CEO groups. Mm-hmm. So follow the money. And and you wanted to say something about dark matter in the media universe, too, related to that, because it is related. When you follow the money, there's – go ahead and explain what dark matter has to do with the media universe.
Well, it's very brief, and I'm just fiddling with this as an analogy. But if you tally up all the visible matter of the universe, all the light and all the stuff you can see, you fall about 90% short of enough matter to explain the universe, to explain its existence. And it by the laws of physics, should collapse back in on itself or not even exist at all unless you have a whole lot more matter out there that you can't see. And that, generally speaking, is called dark matter and or dark energy. And the Higgs boson experiment is an attempt to capture, record it, make, you know, find it, and point, be able to point to it and say, yes, such stuff does exist. Therefore, the universal equation does balance out. There's enough out there to keep the universe going. In the media, in our media universe, in one of my favorite words, the noosphere of the planet, there are severe, as we grow ever more transparent and digital, there are severe consequences for some people who make public mistakes. When Anthony Weiner takes a picture of his weenie and texts it to someone, his career is over. When Elliot gets caught, his career is ended. Elliot Spitzer, career over. A digital camera really upended the Romney campaign. George Allen was done in by someone with a camera and him saying macaca. That's not the only thing, but the way in which information is digitized now and the way in which it can be instantly broadcast everywhere can change your life radically, can ruin your career, can really cut your legs out from underneath you if you're a public person. And that is the world that we are entering into. And I think there's a lot of merit to thinking of that radical transparency happening from now on. Facebook is now coming up with new ways to mine your preferences, to learn everything about you, to create a virtual version of you, to market to you, to sell your profile to companies, potentially to threaten and extort you. I mean, things you don't want people to know about you are rapidly becoming more, less and less easy to hide. Except there are a distinct class of people, and I would put people like David Brooks in that class, who can fuck up publicly every day of their lives and never, ever pay a price for it. And I don't mean just write something stupid about a consumption tax or make a mistake or write, you know, bad, mawkish columns. I mean, when David Brooks wrote after the Penn State rape case, you know, underage child rape case came out, David Brooks took to his pen and blamed hippies for it.
Yeah,
he blamed the loose morals of the 60s. And well, if you've grown up in this anything goes permissive atmosphere, no one knows what to do when you suspect someone is molesting a child. Bullshit. And he should have been fired after that column. Seriously. And I don't I don't mean that, you know, I don't mean that in a generic he wrote a bad column sense. And, you know,
that was immoral of him to say
that. That was depraved of him to say that.
Absolutely immoral.
But David Brooks is a groveling, power sucking ass kisser. And he's obsessed with institutions and a love of power. He will always find a way to grovel and kiss ass of whoever's in power and excuse hierarchies and excuse excesses. As long as they're Republicans or as long as they're authoritarian, as long as they're George Bush going to Iraq, he will find a way to celebrate that and then weasel out of any responsibility for it once it blows up in his face. But again, every now and then he writes a truly unforgivably depraved column. And not only does he not lose his job, no one in the media mentions it. There is this dark matter out there, this thing that protects David Brooks, people like him, and Tom Friedman. Tom Friedman just wrote a really, really god-awful public shitting himself column that was just astonishing. He proposed Arne Duncan for Secretary of State. But he writes crazy, stupid columns all the time. He's the man who invented the Friedman Unit. He is a public embarrassment. And yet when he goes on shows with people who are normally very stern and very pointed in their questioning, like Lawrence O'Donnell, Lawrence O'Donnell just rolled over like a puppy. He said, "Oh, Tom Friedman, you have this new book about third way politics. How exciting. Tell me more about it. Oh, Tom Friedman, that's very interesting. Thanks, Tom Friedman," and just let him walk away. So there are consequences to people, public personalities, saying one wrong thing or having a picture taken of them at the wrong time, suddenly being broadcast all over the world or all over their peer group. But there are people whose jobs are sending information all over the world. They're editorial columnists and they're newspaper columnists and they're public pundits. And some of those people are not only incompetent and bad writers, they're horribly wrong and often depraved. And not only again, are there no consequences to their actions, nobody in their peer group discusses them. Nobody mentions the shit they rub in their hair. And that freaks me out a little bit because...
And I mean, with Tom Friedman, I mean, him being on the Pulitzer Committee and being so connected to everybody and being a billionaire, you know, money's power and contacts are power. And, yep. And we've talked about Chris Hayes' book, Twilight of the Elites.
Yeah.
You know, Tom Friedman has access to the three levels that Chris Hayes talks about.
Uh-huh.
Money, connections, and what's the third one?
Platform.
Yeah.
Platform, yeah. Yeah.
So he's got it all. And if you haven't read Chris Hayes' book, Twilight of the Elites, it's worth reading because it's the anti-David Brooks. It's the fact that institutions are by their very nature, have a corrupt influence in them. And it's human nature to lock the barn door after you get into a level of where your meritocracy let you in.
Then you rig it.
Then you rig it so that everyone else loses. Yeah.
Only let people like you into the system and call it meritocracy. Yes. And you can really see these two universes, this transparent universe of let's tell the truth. And we're all forced to live with a perfectly transparent universe where everybody knows everything about everybody. You can see that universe bumping really hard up against the old boys network of we can get away with murder and nobody's going to hold us to account. You can see it at Rachel Maddow's desk.
Yep.
Because she works for MSNBC and she's very good at what she does and we have nothing but respect for her. But when she inveighs, when she gets up on her soapbox and talks about the goddamn Beltway, and can you believe that John McCain, holy fuck, they're going to keep putting John fucking McCain on the air no matter what he does, no matter how badly he shits himself, he has a job there for life. What is wrong with these people? Who she's really talking about is her colleague named David Gregory, who's sitting 10 feet away from her. And she can't say that. Yeah. She is not allowed to tell that truth on the air. And that's where the dark matter is, because there is someone somewhere in some office who will absolutely flush her down the toilet if she says that out loud.
If she crosses those streams, yeah.
And the current TV is full of people like that.
Yes, current TV is full of people who couldn't not cross the streams. They just right down. Yeah.
There is this other force at work in the media, and the thing that really kind of depresses me is that would be a really reporting on who those people are and the influence they have and how they keep people like Gregory on the air and force people they don't like off the air. That would be a wonderful story if we actually had a media report on such things, but sadly we don't.
No, but we do have cocktail parties with Sally Quinn, so there's that.
And we have the Professional Left podcast.
Yes, we do. I wanted to talk for a minute about The Real Losers on November 6th.
Yeah. Very sad.
It's very sad. The centrists.
Yeah.
Are really not quite there. The both sides do it. People have gone underground for a little while.
They don't know what to make of this.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because nobody spontaneously formed a third party. And again, if you read or listen to Tom Friedman, you know, whinging on about the kind of third party he has in mind, he is describing 88% of the Democratic Party. And he can't admit that, because if he does, then he doesn't have any snake oil to sell.
Yeah.
So he has to invent this completely different creature that is remarkably similar to the Democratic Party. And he has to do that because if you start pointing out that one side is crazy, one side's weak and one side vacillates, one side makes mistakes, but one side is fucking crazy. Again, if the minute you point that out on the air, off to current TV you go.
Yeah. Well, and one side at this moment in time really doesn't know who they are.
Yeah.
They are in the wilderness, literally in the wilderness. They cannot simply back up the pledge to not raise taxes because that's out the window. They can't be small government because of the Pentagon. They want that Pentagon spending back.
You know what?
And they're except for gerrymandering, they got gerrymandering and the Confederacy. They got nothing.
They painted themselves in the back corner.
Yeah.
To win elections during the 80s and 90s and 2000s, they painted themselves into this corner, and now they can't get out of it. And it reminds me, in a weird way, of the last scene from, I think it was Quantum of Solace, where James Bond drives the bad guy into the desert and abandons him there with a quart of oil.
Yeah.
And says, I'll give you 20 miles. I bet you it'll take you 20 miles before you decide to drink it.
Yeah.
And then later, they find him. They say, they found him in the desert with a quart of oil in his stomach. You wouldn't know anything about that, would you? Mm-hmm. No, ma'am. Well, the GOP is walking past one drinking fountain full of sparkling fresh water after another, after another, after another. But all they know how to do is drink oil.
Yes.
And it's killing them.
Yep.
And they would actually rather drink poison and die in a desert of their own making than admit that they've made a really bad mistake, that a lot of their people are crazy and bigots, that a lot of their policy is driven by the entertainment media, by people they pay a lot of money to lie to them. And
Joy Reid, who's really the smartest person on television these days, as far as I'm concerned, made the point that they get their money from billionaires.
Yes. Yep.
The Democratic Party gets their money from billionaires in Hollywood and everybody else.
Yep.
And so the billionaires are calling up the GOP and saying, don't raise my taxes. Don't make sure you stop the death tax. Make sure my taxes are low. Follow my agenda. And then these Congress people go home to their districts and everyone is like, why don't you just raise taxes on billionaires?
What's wrong with you?
What's wrong with you?
It reminds me a little bit about Wally Shawn on the Murphy Brown Show when he played Stuart Best and was running for office.
Yeah.
And he begged Murphy Brown to save him because he said, look, they put him on the air and he read these incredibly racist crackpot, you know.
Yeah.
People say lots of bad things about slavery, but was it really so bad? But in the end, and the nice looking Republican, the nice looking Democrat both disavow him. But he said, look, I took a lot of money from a lot of crazy people.
Yeah.
And they'll kill me.
They
will actually overthrow governments. And they'll actually kill me if I don't make good on this. And that really is those are the people the Republican Party has sold themselves out to.
Yeah.
And their base, who wants to believe the Earth is 9,000 years old, and they want to believe that science
six thousand.
Sorry, see, this is what I get for public school education. I can't figure out which creationist myth I'm supposed to believe. But they really have sold themselves out to crazy rich people and a bunch of Bible thumping fundies who really are anti-science and anti-woman and atavistic in every way, and bigots. And that's the iron triangle of the Republican Party. And trying to explain their policies, which need to hit all of those corners, to normal humans who think that's crazy, is the corner they're stuck in. And again, until they decide to jettison those people, to give them the back of their hand and walk away from them, walk away from money and power and influence for probably two or three election cycles.
Yeah.
They're stuck with them, and they're going to get smaller and angrier and crazier. And the people and the base is going to get more and more violent and dangerous.
Yeah.
And that's the death spiral they're in. And the problem is it wrecks the rest of us. They still have the power to do enormous damage to this country.
And yet what is being proposed at the party level. By the way, Rince Priebus still has his job.
Yeah.
And, what's being proposed is we'll just end the Iowa caucus.
Yeah.
That'll fix it.
Well, actually, one thing you and I talked about briefly, and I'll throw this in just at the very, very end, is somewhere in the Republican Party, there is a Republican lawmaker. This is pure fantasy on my part, mind you. This is pure fantasy. There's someone in the GOP who remembers, I'm sorry, Johnson working with what's his name Edward in the Dirksen, Senate? Or? Edward Dirksen. Thank you. Edward Dirksen. I should know that. He's from Illinois, for God's sake.
Yes,
he is. In fact, we have this picture on our refrigerator for reasons that we will explain one day. But someone in the Republican Party somewhere with some sense of history and who isn't Newt Gingrich is going to figure out that 100 years from now or 200 years from now, people are still going to remember Barack Obama. Mm-hmm. He is now a part of history, a really big part. People don't remember Millard Fillmore. I'm sorry, Fillmore fans out there, that you just don't. But people remember FDR. They remember Lincoln. They remember a handful of others. And people are going to remember the first black president. They're going to remember him as being the president during the time of Great Recession, during mm-hmm. the time of terrible war, during the time of great turmoil. They're going to remember him winning re-election.
Yeah, and they're going to remember him as the president that changed, that served as president of the United States during a tremendous demographic change in the United States.
And
it's going to be part of the story.
Yeah. And there will be a few people in the footnotes of his story. And the Republican Party, by and large, at this point, is going to be cast as a cartoon character. There were this sour group of old, cranky white men who couldn't stand the fact America was changing and did everything they could, including actually sabotaging the economy to try to stop America from changing, which is, when you think about when this would be written, America will already have changed and it will be whatever it's going to be. At some point, someone on the right is going to figure out that if they want to live on in history, if they want to have a profile that extends beyond their years, they would probably do best to put their arm around Barack Obama and be his pal and be the Republican, the conservative, the whatever, who got with the program and worked in a bipartisan way across the aisle like Johnson and Dirksen. Again, that's just a fantasy, but anybody who thinks that history is not going to be written in a way that's going to make the GOP look absolutely disastrous and will children two generations from now will want to know, why were they this crazy? What was wrong with them? Daddy, were you really a Republican back then? Ooh, I'd rather you drank toxic waste. Forgot. Why would you vote against the planet being a nice green place, Daddy? Why did you think that was a good idea?
Well, and I think that role has been filled already, though, by Biden and Hillary Clinton.
Oh, that
so, the people that put their arms around Barack Obama and said, yes, this is he's going to have a place in history, and I want to be a part of that and be on the side of that rather than against it,
that
joined the team.
They joined the team on the left, well, the center, let's face it. Those people aren't liberals. But on the right, if some enterprising young Republican politician, I'm thinking Alan Alda from the West Wing, wants to stand up and say this was a great man who served at a difficult time, and he carried out the duties of his office nobly, and we should be grateful to him. The person who makes that speech on the right might lose their job.
Well, but that's already happened too, Driftglass. Charlie Crist did that.
Yeah, well, he hugged him and said, thank you for helping me with this crisis, which was damn nice.
No, Charlie Crist in Florida.
I'm sorry, Charlie Crist, you're right. I'm sorry. See, all these Chris Christie, Charlie Crist.
Chris Christie.
I.
and China ambassador guy.
John Huntsman. Well, yeah, the forgettable.
They've all done that and see where it gets them in the Republican Party. I mean,
well, they all did that once it was too late.
Yeah, once they didn't have a job anyway. Yeah.
Anyway.
So you think an enterprising Republican should come out now and say, look, if they put it the way you just did.
Yeah.
You know, no one is going to remember us except as a bunch of cranky old white guys
mm-hmm.
who obstructed America.
Yeah. History is being written right now.
Yeah. Yeah.
And however hard David Brooks is working to write it the right way, that's not going to work. And this guy is going to be on statues, and schools will be named after him long after everyone who has forgotten who the hell we are. As a party, they will remember us as obstructionist bigots who held on to the last remnants of the Confederacy in the face of the first black president. That's how we will be remembered, unless we start to figure out how the fuck to get out from under these crazy billionaires and these crazy fundies and these bigots that we depend on now. And maybe we can't do it, but I ain't going down with that ship.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to carve my own little niche into this very large edifice, and I'm going to be one of the guys who said, look, I might disagree with him on a lot of things, but he's a good man and our country's in trouble and we need to pull together.
And the that's the speech that John McCain could have given if he wasn't so senile.
Yes, exactly. So, and again, this is fantasy. This is pure alternate history, future history, science fiction. Everyone take a drink. But it's not implausible that someone who has a sense of survival and a sense of legacy might consider doing that just as a matter of pure political opportunism.
Yeah.
Because no one else has taken that role.
Yeah. Well, let's end there.
Yeah.
We thank you so much for listening. Every week we feature at our website and Facebook page an internet kitty sent in by you, the listeners. This week's internet kitty is Dexter. Dexter looks elegant, but, you know, he may be a serial killer in the mouse world. It's hard to tell. You can send your internet kitty photos to us at our email address, proleftpodcast@gmail.com, where you can also write to both of us. Feel free to write us. We love hearing from you. And be aware that if you write us, we reserve the right to read your letter or email on the air unless you say otherwise. So, Driftglass, how are the internet kitties doing this week?
Well, Blue Gal, the internet kitties are busy cataloging their Frank Zappa bootleg tapes.
Let's think about living. Let's think about loving. Let's think about the hooping and the hopping and the bopping and the loving, lovey-doving. Let's forget about the whining and the crying, the shooting and the dying, and the fellow with a switchblade knife. Let's think about living. Let's think about life.
This podcast is recorded under a Creative Commons license, copyright 2012, Driftglass Blue Gal Podcast.
Absolutely, those Frank Zappa bootleg tapes are going to come in really handy because Zappadan.
Yay!
Yay, Zappadan! Every year we celebrate the Festival of Zappadan. It runs from December 4th, which is Bummer Knock, the last day Frank Zappa refused to die.
Yeah, quitter. Quitter.
Running to his birthday on December 21st, I have decided unilaterally that this year's theme is a quote from Frank Zappa that Gail Zappa reminded us all of when she did her Get Out the Vote video this year. The theme is keep the government out of your underwear. And I just love that. So think about Frank Zappa. There's lots of fun videos of Frank Zappa out there. You mentioned one.
Yeah. Zappa Novak.
Zappa versus Novak.
Yeah.
And Novak calls him Mr. Zappa.
Mr. Zappa. Yeah, that's right, goddamn it.
Mr.
Right,
Zappa. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I also love the earliest video of Frank Zappa, I think, on television was when he was on the Steve Allen show playing a bicycle. Oh. A very young Frank Zappa. But,
well, and my friends and I hauled ass to some midnight show, and I believe it was in Homewood for 200 Motels years ago, and it was, I remember most of the evening, and it was a it was a very weird experience. I had not yet sort of fully grasped the how to appreciate the absurd, and it left me, it changed me, Blue Gal, in deep and profound ways. So you know, that happens.
And I was never a Frank Zappa music fan until Zappadan started, and over the course of each year I gain a new appreciation for, as you say, the absurdity and the talent. And the look,
genius.
This is art, and really the blog credo of look, this is art, this is what I do, and this is who I am, and I'm not going to change for anybody. And stand up for what you believe in. I mean, he really got that, and is a model
real
for all of us.
Real honest God genius. Honest to Pete genius. Yep.
So celebrate Zappadan with us. We always expect miracles during the Festival of Zappadan.
You do.
Because during the first Zappadan in 2006, John Bolton resigned.
He did.
So expect miracles December 4th to 21st. And happy Zappadan, everyone.
Happy Zappadan, Blue Gal.